The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play! Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Oh, we have been looking forward to this one for a long time. Beyond the Box Score is finally back. Man, the last time we talked to people, we were, you know, reviewing Sunday Night Football to start the show. You guys want to like preview the Oscars or something like that? What's Dan? I'm sure you're into the Oscars, Dan, right?
Not an Oscars guy. A little bit of the boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. Yeah, we're excited for this show. The boys are back. We're predicting future breakout stars. We watched a lot of tape for this one, and you know what? Oscars, they can wait. Okay, we got to talk about players. We got to get into the nerdy stuff here. We're going to do it here because we got the king of the nerds, Jacob Gibbs. How you doing today?
Oh, my gosh.
That's a good thing. I say that as a good thing. I am pro nerd. I'm a nerd. Oh, Jacob's a nerd. Sure. I think you'd would you classify yourself as a nerd, Jacob? Because I classify myself as a football nerd.
I'm currently reading a book that my sister got me for Christmas. It's titled Nerd.
There we go. It says it all right there. And Adam, by the way, if you don't think of yourself as a nerd, then you have some serious issues with self-identification.
I don't know if I'm a nerd. I mean, I don't read books like Jacob, so that's a point.
Adam,
for me.
You're not a nerd.
Schaefer will be unbiased.
Yes.
Thomas Schaefer, am I a nerd?
All you guys are nerds.
Exactly. Thomas is the type of guy who would stuff us in lockers in high school. That's what Thomas is. Okay.
I got a trivia question for you geeks. We're going to talk about the Packers today, the Packers receiving core. And which Green Bay wide receiver was top 5 in explosive catch rate and top 10 in yards per target among wide receivers with 50 or more targets?
Dontavian Wicks, of course.
I was going to say Wicks, yeah. But maybe Christian Watson.
No, it's Dontavian Wicks.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I know Jacob loves Jaden Reed, but I wanted to know.
Jacob loves the whole Matt LaFleur offense.
Yeah. All right. Well, it is Dontavian Wicks, so we'll get to him. Hey, check out Sportsline, sportsline.com. Sign up right now. We have an amazing offer for you. You can get great content from Jacob and Dave and Jamie and Heath on sportsline.com. And it's a gambling website. We know we talk about the fantasy angle. There's great, obviously, fantasy content, but the gambling information and advice is top-notch and transparent, too. You'll see which experts are doing well at the time and whatnot, and they're, you know, most of them are doing well. They're really good at what they do. So you want to make a little money, read some interesting content, go to sportsline.com/join and get 60% off an annual plan. Holy cow. 60% off an annual plan with the promo code WINNERS. The promo code is WINNERS. sportsline.com/join.
So today, get in now, by the way, because March Madness is on the way.
Oh, yeah.
I already heard some of the plans. I've heard some of the plans for Sportsline. Some really, really good content coming in for March Madness. If you're like me, you have not watched a lot of college basketball this year, you didn't have time, make all your picks with Sportsline.
There you go. All right. So What we're doing today is we're star searching. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember the show Star Search.
No shot.
No, no. It was
why
like
do you know that show?
You're American not Idol before, you know, it was like American Idol, I guess.
Oh, okay.
We're going to talk about five young players and if they can become stars. And, you know, I was thinking with Khalil Shakir is one of them, and he only had 611 yards last year. And I was thinking, man, has there been a guy that did as little as Khalil Shakir in his first two seasons and became a star? And how about Nico Collins? Nico Collins had about 940 yards, something like that, in his first two seasons, 950, something like that, combined, and three touchdowns. 1,300 yards and eight touchdowns in year three. So we'll talk about Shakir, JSN, Tajay Spears, Rashad White, and Devon Achan and their star potential. All right, so Khalil Shakir, Jacob, what do you want to talk about with him?
Yeah, I love Khalil Shakir and the pedigree in terms of draft capital and his production through his first 2 years is definitely working against him. He's the guy that we added to this list because he's not so obvious, whereas a lot of these other guys are like clearly set up to break out. But I think, you know, with Gabe Davis departing and the potential role that Shakir has set up for him next year based off what he filled down the stretch in his second year, I'm really, really excited. I really loved his data coming out of Boise. I thought he should have been picked earlier. And then I watched all of his routes last year because he didn't really get to play very much, so it wasn't that much. And I just wanted to validate. I'm like, I swear this guy's good. And yeah, he is good. Like, I definitely left convinced that he could play after watching last year's routes. And then this year, he really did kind of break out, especially at the end of the year, but also just on a per-opportunity basis, he was insane. So we had a league-high catch rate, 87% among 146 receivers. He was the only player with an explosive reception rate of 25% or higher that was paired with an A dot below 10 yards. So he really isn't getting involved down the field all that much, but he was making a ton of explosive plays. And that's because of the yards after the catch, obviously. 7.2 yards after the catch per reception. Only Shakir, Deebo Samuel, and Rashee Rice had rates above 7 yards. And so I watched all of his 2023 targets. I didn't have time to watch all of his routes. There were an unusual number of like broken plays, defensive mix-ups, that kind of stuff I think is naturally going to contribute to this type of efficiency. But he has the speed. He runs a 4.43. He has the speed to take those types of plays to the house. So there's an 81-yard touchdown versus the Jets where Sauce Gardner gambles, misses on an interception, and he's gone. He just has to make one guy miss after that, and he's gone. And like he is capable of doing that, and he's really, really good at finding holes in zones. We'll definitely have Matt Harmon on of Reception Perception later this offseason. I'm excited to see what he thinks of Shakir because when I watch him, he's just working to the open area all the time. He's always open for zone, and the data backs that up. So yeah, I wanted to bring him up. Is he somebody who's on your guys' radar? I've got a bunch of stuff we can get into with the data, but have you watched him much at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start by saying he is on my radar. It's funny you mentioned, because I watch him for the show, obviously, Jacob. It's funny you mentioned one of the names of the people who qualify around, you know, with similar stats and profile as Rashee Rice, because that's kind of who I felt like I was watching a version of when I was watching Khalil Shakir. And I think one thing that's interesting that you mentioned is how easily he uncorks and gets open and understands where to sit in zone. And that's something that's going to be important as he heads into this year, because it's something that the Bills are just going to face a lot of. When you have Josh Allen as your quarterback, or Patrick Mahomes, or one of these elite dudes, the opposing defense is playing a lot of two high. They're playing a lot of three high, cover three, mm-hmm. some cover six. Like, they're not playing a lot of man, and they're not going to play a lot of man. The thing that concerns, let me just start by saying that I like his tape. I like what you brought up, his ability after the catch and kind of how that could lead to a lot of yards and a lot of potential touchdowns. I almost saw, like, in some ways, could the Bills get him involved a little bit as a runner on some end arounds and things like that next year? That could be a part of the playbook when they have a full offseason. Now, I'll tell you the only thing that scares me about Shakir from a fantasy standpoint, Jacob, it's like entirely related to opportunity and to his role and fit among this offense. So I look at Rice, I look at Deebo, and I think there's defined roles for both of them. Even Rice down the stretch was really getting a lot of throws around the line of scrimmage and a lot of targets. In that offense, it made sense. I feel like the same went for Deebo. But in the Bills offense, is there a possibility that Dalton Kincaid, who I really like coming out of college, can take a super big step in year two to a point where he just becomes a focal point of this offense? Because if he does, that's going to take away volume from Shakir. It's just no way around it. And in addition to that, the Joe Brady addition on, as offensive coordinator down the stretch, it really brought for me a different feel to what this Bills identity and offense is. And it's now so much more centered around the run game and the running back. In the pass game, James Cook, and it may be somebody they add as well, but just the run game as well, and from under center, something they weren't doing a lot of under Brian Daboll or with Ken Dorsey. And that was a big boon to them, like putting Josh Allen back under center. It's something that a lot of quarterbacks that I've studied, and like Kurt Warner talked about this, you can't have your quarterback in shotgun all the time. It's too, you make your offense too one-dimensional that way, and it's too easy to scheme against. So if they do go with along the lines of what Joe Brady did at the end of the season, and Dalton Kincaid takes a step forward, it does concern me a little bit about just volume from Shakir. I still think the efficiency is going to be great, and I like the player and the prospect, but just a little concerned with the role.
So I think one of the interesting things with the Bills is when you look at Shakir's numbers in the last three games of the season, including the two playoff games, 16.5 fantasy points at Miami, 12.1 against Pittsburgh. He only had three targets. He caught three catches for 31 yards and a touchdown. And then 17.4 fantasy points against the Chiefs with nine targets, 44 yards and a touchdown in that game. All without Gabe Davis. I think Gabe Davis got hurt in week 18. Maybe week 17, but early in week 18, and then he didn't play in the two postseason games. And yeah, you can look at it with Dalton Kincaid. You can look at it with Khalil Shakir. Better production when Gabe Davis didn't play. But Gabe Davis was almost every week at that point a complete afterthought. 0, 1, 2 targets. So is it just a coincidence, or is Shakir going to have a much bigger role now that Davis is gone? Shakir is in the slot about two-thirds of the time. We're going to talk about actually a lot of slot receivers today. You know, Rashee Rice plays in the slot, not all the time. JSN played in the slot about 60% of the time. Jaden Reed, slot. Khalil Shakir, slot. But one thing about Shakir and Reed is those guys, their ADOT's around 10 yards. So this is not a short area slot guy. Rashee Rice and right. JSN. Rashee Rice and JSN had two of the four lowest ADOTs in the NFL among receivers, wide receivers with 50 or more targets. So Shakir and Reed, from that perspective, were much different, making plays downfield. The yak was ridiculous for Shakir, as we've talked about. But yeah, that's my big question is, first of all, I can't see the Bills not adding someone at receiver. And then I'm more excited about Kincaid from a fantasy standpoint than Shakir. But yeah, I'm getting more interested in Khalil Shakir, and he went with the second to last pick of round 9 in our draft. So that was 105th overall in our most recent mock draft a few weeks ago, just ahead of Cortland Sutton and Romeo Doubs. What do you think about that, Jacob?
I think that's about right. I would probably take him ahead of both of those names, but it definitely depends on what we see happen in Buffalo this offseason. But yeah, he played really well, man. His PFF receiving grade was like right behind Chris Godwin, Deontay Johnson, ahead of Zay Flowers, ahead of Jaden Reed, who we love so much, ahead of Christian Kirk. Those are all, you know, guys that work in the slot a lot. Like, I think that's kind of where he falls as a player already. And yeah, I just wanted to highlight him because I don't think people realize that he was that good. Like, he did flash a little bit at the end of the year, but it could be easy just to be like, you know, he's a fill-in guy in a good offense. He just made some plays. But like, I think he's legitimately good. He was really good in college. And he's done really, really well with any opportunities had at the NFL level.
Last thing I'm going to say, agree or disagree with this. I don't think Shakir can have a really reliable fantasy season unless Stephon Diggs is either not on the team or not really that good anymore. Stephon Diggs is still, you know, one of the better receivers, let's say like a top 15 receiver. I don't really see it for Shakir, just because I like Kincaid a lot too. That would hold me back.
For me, that's an agree with you. It's holding me back as well. And also the third factor, which is Joe Brady, is just running a more balanced, run heavy offense than the Bills have ever had under Daboll and Ken Dorsey.
All right.
Yeah, I think I would agree. Just based off what Dan has brought up with the offensive environment, but I think he's such a good player that there's contingency upside if there is anything that happens to Diggs or Kincaid or anything, sure. Or if they don't draft another receiver and he's just in the third role there.
All right,
what if Diggs falls off? I mean, it's possible. Right. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's possible.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the rest of the Star Search guys, JSN, Tajay Spears, Rashad White, and Devon Achane. We'll be right. Oh, also, Dan apparently did something embarrassing yesterday, so I'm looking forward to hearing about that and making fun of him for it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 63 catches, 628 yards, 4 touchdowns on 93 targets in 17 games. As a rookie, as mentioned earlier, fourth lowest ADOT among wide receivers with 50 or more targets. There were 80 wide receivers with 50 or more targets, and JSN had the fourth lowest ADOT. All right, Jacob, convince me that JSN can be a star if Lockett or Metcalf, if they're both there next year.
If they're both there, I don't feel super optimistic, honestly. I watched every JSN target, and I also watched all of his routes versus press coverage, and he is getting open a lot. And I do think that Shane Waldron's offense was a problem for him. So the reason I say that is that he was much better when he was outside of the slot and he was able to just do actual wide receiver things. He averaged 2.4 yards per out run. When outside of the slot, that's on 147 routes. Compared to 0.83 from the slot. And versus the slot, he was just running drags over and over. It was so boring. But like, I will say, like, we brought up the PFF grade for Shakir and some of the guys he falls in the range of. It's not good when you look at Jaxon Smith-Njigba. 64 puts in the same range as like Wandale Robinson, Tyler Boyd, Elijah Moore. And if you, even if you remove his first four games, you know, to accommodate for the injury early on, his grade is still 68. So that's like Michael Thomas, Jerry Jeudy range. I'm not super, super excited about what we saw last year. Another thing to bring up is that 28% of his targets were design looks. That's per the Fantasy Points data suite. That's the highest of any qualified receiver. So like Zay Flowers, 27%, Rashee Rice, 26%. No one else was above 25%.
And correct me if I'm wrong real quick, Jacob, and you can jump back in, but like, this is how I felt watching him. I agree with that. There were so many of these design looks, but they were the most unimaginative design.
No, yeah, for sure. Right?
Like, they're just like really poorly designed looks.
For sure. Yeah, but they were going out of the way to get him the ball, and it still really didn't amount to much. He was very, very low when it comes to avoided tackles. When I watched him, he didn't look as elusive as I thought he would or as explosive when the ball in his hands. Honestly, like, people are going to hate this, but like athletically, he sort of reminds me of like Sky Moore. He's very quick and he beats people, especially versus the press. He gets open like immediately all the time, but then people catch up with him. And like when he gets the ball in his hands, he rarely seems like a threat to like break a long play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have thoughts on this. You go ahead, Adam.
No. I mean, I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was like the 20th pick in the draft instead of a top 10 pick because he wasn't an athletic specimen or anything like that. Jaxon Smith-Njigba. What are your thoughts, Dan?
I mean, my thoughts are just going by my memory of evaluating him as a prospect. You're right on this. He's not an after the catch guy. He's not a forced missed tackle guy. He's not a speed guy. He won at the collegiate level with, like you said, being able to use route savvy to get open. Now, he had one of the best three cone drills ever. His ability to change directions is unbelievable, and it was on his Ohio State tape. But this offense didn't really feature him. I mean, that's like, if you're looking like the type, let's think of the type of receivers that work like that, like a Julian Edelman, for example. He had a similar type three cone. He had a quarterback like Tom Brady, who's one of the best anticipatory throwers and can get the ball out of his hands in that short intermediate area. Like, that's not something Geno Smith is doing a great job of. Geno Smith during his breakout season was using the vertical plane, and he was really good in that regard. That's not something that really fits, in my opinion. So I don't love the quarterback fit there. I think you brought up an interesting point with the schematic fit. So I think that bringing in Ryan Grubb, who's been the offensive coordinator for the last 2 years with the Washington Huskies, is a really good move potentially for Jackson Smith and Jigba, because I just think it's going to be a different feel for how he's utilizing his slots and how he's utilizing space in the pass game. But I'm not so sure that's going to be the be-all, end-all in the fix here. And I wonder this. I remember last year we talked a lot about how Jackson Smith and Jigba had that season with Chris Olave, and who was the other wide receiver?
Garrett Wilson.
And he's like, oh my God, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba completely outproduced these guys. How good is he going to be? But maybe the whole time we should have been thinking of like, oh, it's CJ Stroud is his quarterback. Right. Got elite quarterback play, and that's a big factor in why his stats are so elite. He doesn't have that anymore with Geno Smith, in my opinion, and it's nowhere close between Geno Smith and CJ Stroud. So maybe the scheme will help him, but I'm with you, Jacob. I think this may not be the best fit for him.
I do think Geno was a problem specifically for Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, he was inexplicably late on so many of his targets that
right.
Jigba, and I don't really understand what if there was lack of trust or that Njigba isn't often the first read, but there were times where it seemed like he was staring him down. It was just delivering it late. Like, Njigba was running an out route. He's open. Get it to him. And if you don't get it to him on the break, then get it to the sideline. But it wasn't either one. It was just late. And it's like, what is this? Why does this keep happening to you?
Yeah, and it's a big problem, because if you're late, then you don't utilize JSN's skill set. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I remember the Dallas game where Geno had his best game of the season. Or, you know, had to be at least one of his best games of the season. And he had said that they were making a point to get the ball out quicker, that they were changing it up. And also, they were missing both tackles early in the season, their right tackle for a lot of the season. So I think that derailed their offense a little bit as well. Very optimistic about JSN if they get rid of Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf. If they don't, I still feel like you could start really seeing Lockett fade. You know, he's at that age. He's coming off, for him, a pretty down season. Where I think, like, if Lockett's out, I think JSN's a fifth-round pick. He might go higher than that, you know, but I don't know that I'd take him higher, but I love him. I mean, I think he can be terrific. And look, he had one game without DK Metcalf last year. He played more on the outside, and he had 4 catches, 63 yards, and a touchdown on 7 targets. Mm-hmm. So he just needs the opportunity. So I could see him actually going in the fourth round, you know, with the helium, as they say. But if they're both back, if Metcalf and Lockett are both back, I think maybe late fifth round, I'd still take a flyer on him. But I'd like to get him in the sixth round. Let me tell you where he went in our most recent draft. Jackson, he went last pick of round 6. And I took Christian Watson 1 pick before him. And I know I was sweating that one.
I've got a few more notes on him just as a player that do support the idea that he could be really good if he wasn't stuck in the slot role. So I already brought up that he was more efficient from the slot. He was also better against man coverage than zone coverage, which is highly unusual.
He was more efficient from the slot or outside?
Outside the slot, sorry. He was better versus man than zone, which is unusual for a slot receiver. Typically slots get peppered versus zone, like we talked about with Shakir. He was also above average in terms of yards per run on deep routes, but was well below average on short routes, which I think mostly the short route note speaks to how vanilla those routes were, like we've already hit on. But I think it's encouraging that he was above average on deep routes. And then he was also more efficient when facing press coverage than on all other routes. And so all those things, I think, are exciting for him to like still potentially be the guy that we got so excited about based off of his collegiate data. Or at least something resembling that.
Let's go to the running backs here. In our most recent draft, Devon Achane was the 22nd overall pick. Rashad White was the, oh gosh, I don't know, 31st? Whatever, right in the middle of round three. And Tajay Spears was the 48th overall pick. So these were all players selected. One was at round two, then round three, then the last pick of round four. Let's lump them together, Jacob. And with Rashad White, Tajay Spears, and Devon Achan, how would you rank them going into next season?
I think I would have Achan the highest, but it's really hard not to put Rashad White there if we expect him to play the role that he did last year. His role is like as favorable as it gets for a fantasy running back. He ran more routes than anyone in the NFL. He's a bell cow. Spears would be the lowest, but man, I'm excited for him.
How about you, Dan?
This is such a tough question because I feel like Jacob nailed it with the analysis. I'm probably going Achan 1, Spears 2, and then Rashad White 3, but it's so hard to put Rashad White 3 given the role he had last year. And some of what I saw on tape after Jacob kind of did a good job of like showing me some plays to look at that has me excited about White. So I'm really just excited about all three, but yes.
Okay.
Yes. I know we may have a different interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, the guy just, he can't run away from anyone. He's just slow, I think, Rashad White. I think his receptions are more impressive than his runs, but his long...
Oh, I'm talking strictly his receptions.
Okay.
I do not like him as a runner. I've never liked him as a runner. Well, I don't think he processes I don't think he processes well as a runner.
He ran a pretty good 40, but I looked at the notes I had from him coming out of college, was my draft prep, and I think I wrote something like, good 40, but doesn't look fast on tape. That was my interpretation. And that's still how I feel about him. And his longest run, I mean, the guy had 272 carries. His longest run was 38 yards.
Right.
So, and that might be a career long, right? Because he was 3.6 yards per carry 1 year. It was like 3.7 another year. It's just, I try not to make too much of yards per carry, but this is a little alarming. I always bring up with Rashad White, he had a very, very tough schedule. He faced seven opponents that were top eight in yards per carry allowed to running backs. But he didn't even really do that well in the rare times that he had good matchups, just in terms of efficiency. So he's the least explosive of these three, I think, by far. And if you're going to keep averaging 3.7 yards per carry, it's 2 years in a row now, that's the kind of guy that could lose his job. So I think you have to, right now, if you were drafting, you don't know what the Titans are going to do. So I do think you have to take Rashad White first. If Tajay Spears is the starting running back for the Titans, it's like a no-brainer for me to take him ahead of Rashad White.
To the point where you might even consider taking him out of Achan.
I think honestly. I honestly think that's on the table because I think you have to wonder what kind of role Achan could have given all the injuries last year. If told me they were getting the same touches, I'd take Achan. But
I'm sure Jacob will get into it. But Spears on tape is just awesome. Unbelievably impressive.
He's awesome, right? All right, go ahead.
Just unbelievable.
Do we feel better about the Titans' offense? Does it matter how good he is?
That's true. It doesn't matter. It's probably the better question.
I'd feel better about. You know what? This might be wrong. I might be completely wrong about this, but we all watched our Tajay Spears tape, and based on what I saw, I think they would have had a better offense if he had been the lead rusher rather than Derrick Henry. Sorry, if that's offensive to Derrick Henry. I love the guy, but I think Spears was so good last year. And it's kind of like Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah, I just feel like maybe Spears can't carry the workload and Henry obviously can. But I feel like the Cowboys did themselves a disservice by not featuring Pollard more. And last year, maybe the Titans did the same by not featuring Spears more.
I do want to have one quick pushback, and then we're going to get into it, Jacob, on the Pollard versus Spears thing, because Pollard at the collegiate level never carried a big workload, but Spears actually did at Tulane. Mm-hmm. He was a workhorse back for them. So I actually think, and I like, based on his low center ground, I just think he can actually handle the work. It's part of why I like Spears so much.
No, that's not the point.
I know you're not saying because of that.
I was just trying to make the point that the team was too loyal to the veteran franchise, fan favorite. I think they did themselves a disservice.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. Jacob, what do you think about Spears?
I think he's awesome. The data backs it up. I'm excited to hear what Dan says specifically about his film, but just real quick, he was fifth among 49 running backs in avoided tackle rate. He was 11th in yards per rush after contact per rush. Per the Fantasy Points data suite, 39% of his attempts went for five or more yards. That ranked fifth behind only Achan, Kyren Williams, Jaylen Warren, and Christian McCaffrey. And then he was eighth in yards per out run as well. So good as a receiver too. And all that's backed by his collegiate data too. And then when you watch him on film, he's just breaking off big plays all the time.
Yeah. Take that away, Dan.
I mean, that's the first thing I have in my notes. The juice is real. The burst is real. I mean, there's plays, the Atlanta game, quarter four, 940. If anyone has game pass and wants to check it out, the first play of the Colts overtime game toward the end of the season, there's just examples of him. And I put these on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and I thought we were going to do this show, so you can find them there too. But there's just examples of him coming into a hole where the linebacker has the angle on him every time. And for some reason, he's able to manipulate that angle, create space. And a lot of it is just winning to the edge, but that's fine if you can beat those angles, the edge. And he consistently proves that he can. He turns the corner, he transitions upfield for extra yardage on so many plays. But then in addition to all that, having that burst, having that ability to kind of manipulate the linebackers and the safeties and win in space to the outside, he also is really good when it comes to getting low through contact and then having that low center of gravity and that contact balance, the thing that has made Alvin Kamara such a special player for so many years. And that allows him to create after the contact because he gets so low and has that low center of gravity. So, and that's something, this is all stuff you saw on his Tulane tape. It's one of the most impressive running back films you're going to watch of any back in the last few years. Now he was drafted later in the draft because he had that potential degenerative knee issue. And I think maybe down the line, that could be something we worry about. We're talking about redraft right now. We're talking about 2024. And for 2024, that doesn't concern me with Tajay Spears. And so I said this in my notes. If they do add Joe Alt, and they have a draft pick where they could get one of these top tackles in the class, if they add one of these top tackles in the class and their line is so bad, they probably have to, and they have a young quarterback, I'm going to be drafting a lot of Tajay Spears. And it doesn't even matter to me who they add, because like you said, Adam, I think it could be a situation where it's like Pollard Zeke, but they actually lean on the Pollard type this way, and they lean on Tajay Spears. So this is one of my favorite players for 2024.
And look, he was a third round pick. It's not like he was a super late pick. He was still a day two pick, and you get a lot of good running backs in that range. Alvin Kamara was a third round pick. David Montgomery was a third round pick. Let's see who else. Rashad White was a third round pick. David Johnson was a third round pick. Actually, more misses than hits, I would say. It's a little underwhelming of a list, but there are some studs in that group as well. Jacob, let me ask you from an advanced stats perspective. Jaylen Warren always pops up when you look at running back metrics.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best. Is he a cautionary tale for Tajay Spears, or is he still just someone that, if not for Najee Harris, maybe Jaylen Warren would be like a third round pick or something like that?
I think maybe I'm leaning closer to the latter. I really do think Jaylen Warren is good. But definitely anytime when you're dealing with such small sample sizes, it's worth taking it with a grain of salt. But when it's backed by the film and it's backed by collegiate data and film as well, I feel pretty confident that Spears is good.
Yeah, me too. All right, he's the starting running back, you might want to buy into the hype on Tajay Spears. I think that's kind of what we're saying. And is there anything you wanted to say about Achan or White?
There's a lot to say about Achan. White, you brought up David Johnson back-to-back with him, and that's I feel like when I watch White, he's like 90% of David Johnson. Does that
I love click? That comp. I love
no,
that
not
comp.
Really. I feel like...
No, I love that comp.
I don't think...
Johnson had more breakaway ability. But I like that comp in their ability to manipulate space as receivers.
White had a ton of breakaway plays. I mean, that's I want to definitely hear
receivers basically all in the receiving game, right? I mean, for the
yeah,
most
but
part.
David Johnson wasn't a good runner, really.
He wasn't really, yeah.
Johnson?
He was like an average rusher.
Yeah, if you look
I think
at
he was early in his career, and I think the injuries kind of took their toll on him. But
well, by the end, he was terrible after the injuries.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say it was pretty impressive, Rashad White's receptions. As long as I only watched his like 8 receptions that went for 20 or more yards. But no, I don't know that they were that impressive, really. I was really impressed by the Bucs screen game. They executed it really, really well. They blocked downfield well. And then White has like one move. He puts his foot in the ground. Like a linebacker's coming in at one way. He puts his foot in the ground. He goes, yeah, it's a great move. But he's got one move. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
You're not wrong. Like I have in my notes, Rashad White, because I was actually really impressed with his receptions. I have really good at manipulating space after the catch, sets up defenders so well with how he tempos his catch, tempos his moves post catch and manipulates the angles. There were just so many examples of the linebacker or the safety having the angle to stop Rashad White for like a 3 yard gain. And somehow he sets him up. Like you said, it is one move, but I just think the tempo that he it's hard for some of these backs to understand in the passing game. Tempo. And the same thing goes for the receivers. It's why I like Jaden Reed so much, the way he tempos his routes. It's what made Cooper Kupp good, Doug Baldwin, all of these players. But when you do it and you have the right tempo and you set up the defenders well, it really looks like they're foolish on a lot of these plays, Adam. And I know you saw that a lot. Some of these linebackers and safeties have clear angle. This should be a 2 yard gain for White. And now somehow it's 20 yards or 25. So I think that's an actual skill set. And I think that's an actual trait. And I don't think that's going away. And like you said, part of why I like him is because of what you said. The system is set up to get him the football in the passing game. And I think a lot of that was to make Baker Mayfield a better player and make it easier for him. And I don't see how that's going to really change if he's back as quarterback. So I do still really like the pass game role. It's the running that always kind of scares me with White.
And then let's wrap it up with some Achan thoughts, Jacob.
Yeah, so really with Achan, we're trying to... This offseason, I think our task as a fantasy community is to decide on whether we believe Achan is a historic outlier type of producer or not. Is he Jamaal Charles? Is he like a better version of CJ Spiller or something like that? Because he really has to be an outlier, I think, based on the weight and the workload that we saw, at least his usage in year one. So the notes I have, his first two collegiate seasons, he was splitting the backfield with Isaiah Spiller at Texas A&M, and his data there was insane. He really looked like he might be that kind of an outlier. But then he got the bell cow role in year three, and there was a big efficiency fall off for Achan. And so that, I think, is noteworthy that maybe in this system, in a part-time role, as long as he doesn't have to be the every-down player, like he can be this type of efficiency, and we can believe in it. Also, though, like there definitely was a lot of big play inflation that comes into effect here with his numbers, obviously. And so, like, you're going to see, you know, his yards after contact was historic. His yards per rush was the best of all time, all this stuff. But when you remove rushes of 25 plus yards from the data set, not just his, but everybody's, Achan ranked 16th among 57 qualified running backs in yards after contact per rush. So I'm curious if we think he's actually like an exceptional yardage creator in terms of creating after contact, or like, is he actually great at avoiding tackles and busting these big plays? Or is it mostly just he's super fast, he's hitting big holes in a really well-designed system? Did you get a chance to watch him, Dan?
Well, question real quick. Isn't that good though? If you take away his 25 yard carries and everybody's, he's what, 16th out of 45 in yak per carry?
I consider that very good for the type of running back he is. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it's not like this is a fluke. It's just like if you don't take it away, he's at 5.1 yards after contact per rush. And the next closest is 3.9. He looks like the best damn running back of all time. Right. But if you do take it away, he's at 2.9, which is, 75th percentile, which is good. For sure.
Still higher than Saquon Barkley somehow last year.
Let's hear Dan's film review thoughts after a quick commercial break on Beyond the Box Score of Fantasy Football Today. We'll be right back.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, Dan Schneier, what'd you see when you took a look at Devon Achane?
So I'm going to try to keep this part brief, but you know, when you do this for a living, you have misses, you have hits, but Devon Achane, whew, that was a hit, and we're going to go back.
Well, you know, you just can't get his name right. You just, like, I even tried to set you up. I said it right before I went to you. I said Devon Achane, and here you are bragging about it, and you just can't get his name right.
Let's take a walk back in time, though, to a text message I sent Adam Azer last year around this time, actually a little bit earlier. He said, I want you to come up with the best possible fits for rookie players and their NFL teams. And I said, I would love to see Devon Achane in Mike McDaniel's system. And Adam's like, what? You can't pick a player like that. Pick somebody like, I'm trying to do Adam's voice. Sometimes it gets a little high. Yeah. Pick somebody like, he's giving me like all the top running backs in the class, protected running backs. He's like, you can't do this. Devon Achane, he'll be nothing more than a kick returner at the NFL level. So Adam was wrong. I was right. We now love Achane.
Devon Achane.
We love Achane and the fit with Mike McDaniel. And part of what made him so special, and I think you're right, Jacob, but I think what Adam said after that was even more right, which is it's not a bad thing. Part of it is the system fit. He is a one-cut runner. He is someone who, when you can get him in space, is a dynamic player in his ability to understand angles and to really utilize them. And I thought at A&M, I agree with you, the efficiency went down, but I thought when he was the workhorse, Jacob, I actually liked what he was able to do because he is really strong through contact for a player of his size, and he was not afraid to take it up the middle and run up the middle. It was very different than, say, Rashad White, who at Arizona State would just bounce everything outside. Achane understood how to process inside runs, and that's something that really stood out to me at A&M. It's why I loved him so much. But I'll say this, even when I watched the Buffalo playoff game, and I think one thing you mentioned in your notes, Jacob, that I kind of saw too, was he maybe wasn't the same player after the injury when he came back, and that's just going to happen to players. But even in that Buffalo playoff game, I just love some of the creative things I saw with Josh McDaniel in that game to get him the ball in space. There were some wild motions pre-snap and then pitch to Achane where he's just like pulling guards and doing all sorts of interesting things with an H-back. And then the ball comes to Achane in space. And before you know it, he's taking this for a big run because the Dolphins have manipulated the space and they've got him out into an area where he just has really a lane and he has to beat one or two defenders. And he's going to do that a lot. So yes, if Achane was made, let's say there was a new coaching staff or something, I'd have some concerns. But year two in Mike McDaniel, I just think it could get even better for a player like him. So I'm very high on him. The injury is something that concerns me, given his style of play, though, and just overall versus some of these other players. I would say the role, I don't ever foresee him being maybe a workhorse in this offense, but he has proven in the past that he's good in the red zone. They obviously leaned on Mostert toward the end of the year, but at the beginning they were giving him a lot of touches there. So I think that's still in play as well for him, more potential touchdowns.
Yeah, I still think we have to talk about Raheem Mostert, who had a really good year and still seemed to be the lead back. And I don't know that Achane can be a second round pick if they still have Raheem Mostert. I don't know that they will. And I know Mostert's really old, but I can't sit here and say that he's the most injury prone running back on the team. That might be Achane, you know? And I it's all about the workload. I mean, it's all about there's so much bust potential for Achane, but there's also so much boom potential. He will be one of the, he'll be one of the trickiest players on draft day, I think. Just can't let him fall past the second round right now, I'd say. We'll see. All right. So before the show started, Dan said, did you see what I did yesterday? And then he said something like, I thought you were going to make fun of me for it, but I didn't see. So I'm looking forward to this, Dan. So what hilarious, embarrassing thing did you do yesterday?
So embarrassing. So new place opened up by me. It's called Pastrami House. And obviously, as a Jewish boy, I love eating pastrami. and I love matzo ball soup, and I love all that pickles, the half sour, half sweet pickles. It's just as good as it gets. And we don't have a place like that near me where I live. So opened up one of the first days. I go in there, schmooze with the owner. Guy loves me. Tweet out. I'm like, all right, let me do you a favor. All right. Guy loves me. I'm like, let me do you a favor. He's giving me discounts, give me free stuff. He's loves this guy's great. And I'm like, all right, let me do you a favor. I'm kind of a big shot in the Twitter world. All right. Take a look at this. take a look at this. Here's my profile. I have all these followers.
No, you didn't show him the profile.
No, I showed him the profile, Jacob. Wow. I had to confirm to him that I was actually doing him something that could be potentially of value, I hope, for his business. Because I want his business to work. And so I'm like, I'm going to take a picture of the food. I'm going to tweet it out and talk about how good it is and tag you in it. And then when I finally did it, Adam, like somebody who was 77 or 79 years old, has never ever functioned an iPhone in his life before. I took a picture that was like cut off, and it was like not the full full picture. It's like this size.
Did you delete it?
Like 60% of the photo is white space, and then you see like the used photo and the retake photo in the bottom left and the bottom right. Just unbelievably embarrassing. Didn't do a good job showcasing his food, and now if that business fails, we'll take full blame on it.
Is it still up?
It's still up. You can find it on my Twitter from last night.
Oh, boy, that's really, that's not a good picture.
It's like I've never operated an iPhone before. It's unbelievable. I don't know what came over me. I was too excited. I was schmoozing. I was in my element.
We got to get this picture up here. I mean, it's not that bad. Let me see it. Let me take a look and see if this looks good. Where's your Russian dressing? Where's your Russian dressing on the pastrami?
So he asked me how I wanted it. And usually I do hot pastrami on rye with just the spicy brown mustard. But he's like, try it dressed. And dressed is coleslaw in Russian. I like coleslaw Russian. So I tried it dressed and it was really good. The matzo soup was amazing as well. The pickles were great. So just an excellent place.
That is so
much white space. So much white space.
It's so bad. I got to tell you, I think rye bread is one of the worst breads in the world.
No,
absolutely
don't say something
hate
stupid
rye
like that.
Bread.
Like, come on, Adam.
Any other
Are you
bread?
Even Jewish?
Oh, come on! I just polished off a loaf of challah. All right, like that's real bread. That's good bread. Rye bread,
is great.
Sourdough bread, rye bread. Those are the two worst breads, I think.
Then let me ask you a question, by the way, because you got tagged in this and you didn't answer this. If you saw the picture and you bring it back up, did you see in that sandwich, there's a stick?
Yeah.
That stick is not there to, as Jamie says, check the temperature of the rye.
No, because this isn't a burger. This isn't a burger.
This is a piled high pastrami sandwich. Are you going to take the stick out of this?
I mean, for the record, in this picture, it does not look like a piled high. I can barely see the pastrami.
Picture, but if you zoom in, you'll see. It's pretty stacked if you zoom in. You're going to take the stick out of a sandwich like this.
Yes. I don't eat.
Why?
I always take the stick out.
No, you use it to keep the sandwich together.
I don't need to. I'm an adult. I'm
That's
almost 40.
That's not about being an adult. It's about so it doesn't fall out, so it doesn't get messy all over the place. Why would you not want to keep the sandwich together?
I don't have that problem with my sandwiches. I don't know what to tell you. I can
all
eat
right.
them
well, everyone
them.
Else seems to, and I've had a lot
no,
of people corroborate
don't.
This. People support me in the comments all the time on Twitter, so check the replies.
Jacob, thoughts on sourdough versus rye?
The comment section is saying you've gone too far for the sourdough slander.
Sourdough is okay. Sourdough toast with real butter.
Rye is good.
Rye tastes like a pickle, which
rye
is also
is
the
good.
Pickle is the worst.
You don't use rye on everything, but pastrami, the rye has its place.
Yeah. It's that sourness. There's like a sourness to rye that I don't
yeah,
like.
It's a bitterness, a little sourness. I like that. Yeah.
Pickle is, people know, probably might know this, but
wait, don't tell me you don't like pickles.
They're sandwich ruiners. They seep into the sandwich. All you taste is the pickle. They completely, you don't even know you're eating pastrami. You're eating a pickle with a hint of pastrami. Pickles
Adam,
are just awful.
Would you say pickles are awful?
They're awful. Yeah, they're terrible.
Are you even Jewish? Really?
I don't stereotype me.
I will stereotype you.
Okay. Non-Jews like pickles too. I'm telling all of you religions out there.
Oh, everybody
suck.
Likes pickles. They're amazing. But like, what Jew doesn't like pickles?
Well, enough with the Jew. Enough. Get religion off the show. Okay.
too much.
Too much.
Religion.
Too much. You've gone too far.
Culture. Too much culture.
Yes.
Enough bread talk. I want to talk some cheese. I want to talk Green Bay Packers.
Yes. Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Don't let him miss on the pack. He's very excited about the Packers.
Okay. I did watch some Russell Wilson tape. I just want to say that I saw two plays. One should have been a 35-yard Jerry Jeudy touchdown, and one should have been even longer a Jerry Jeudy touchdown. And I still love Jerry Jeudy.
I guess. Oh, no. Do you?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
I saw a lot of plays in the two games where I felt like there was something there for the Denver receivers, be it Jeudy, Sutton, Mims, whatever. Like Mims had a play where he ran right by Derek Stingley. He put a double move on him, ran right by him, and a underthrown deep ball by Russell Wilson. There was really a lot of meat left on the bone if you look at that passing game. And also, I want to say this about Wilson. This needs to change. He was 19th in pass attempts. He was 29th in pass attempts of 8 to 15 air yards. That's just total pass attempts.
Wow.
So everything he threw was either a wide receiver, a screen to somebody, or a deep ball. That's pretty much
that's crazy.
All he did. You know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's terrible for a guy like Jerry Jeudy. It worked out for Cortland Sutton, but...
I read something about how Sean Payton really training wheels that offense for Russell Wilson and really took away all of his kind of authority as a quarterback.
Right. So I wonder what happens, but I did see him either not see or make some inaccurate throws on open receivers, a lot of not seeing, but I also saw some really, really good throws. Like, holy cow, what a deep throw he just made to Sutton in particular. So
that's some really great red zone throws too. Good ball placement.
Yeah, and he scrambled well too. So I'm going to call him average. That's my takeaway from it. Makes some mistakes. I think quarterbacks miss open receivers. Don't see them a lot. That happens in football. I don't watch enough film to know like what's normal. But anyway, let's talk about the Green Bay Packers passing game.
Yeah, so just talking about like potential stars, I think that's what we've got on our hands here with like everyone in Green Bay, like Jordan Love, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, Romeo Dubs, Christian Watson, Luke Musgrave. Like there's so many guys here who have really exciting potential. And I love Matt LaFleur, his offense. I felt even more encouraged about the direction of the offense after really digging into the film. So I watched JT O'Sullivan, the quarterback school on YouTube. Definitely check him out if you want more in-depth content and quarterback analysis. I watched his breakdowns. He does a 30 to 40 minute breakdown every week of the quarterbacks that he's interested in. And so with Jordan Love, since his first year, there's a ton of content. I watched weeks 1 through 5 just to see how he started the year, because weeks 3 through 5 were actually pretty bad. And then I watched weeks 12 and 13. Those are two of his best games. I was against Detroit on Thanksgiving and then against Kansas City. And then I watched his two playoff games. And man, I think there's so much potential for Jordan Love. I'm curious what you guys think. Just he was, as expected, like sloppy this year. Footwork a lot of the time, not just bouncing around a lot in the pocket when he didn't need to. But just the throws with anticipation that he makes, like nobody makes. There are very, very few guys that are even like imagining making that kind of throw, and let alone taking it. And he's got the arm talent to go with that anticipation that like he can make just about any throw out there. And then LaFleur is just getting these guys open so often with pre-snap motion stuff, just really creative designs. I really, really loved that. And then so Romeo Dubs is somebody who I've been pretty low on just from an analytical standpoint, looking at his data. I get more excited about guys like Jaden Reed and Wicks who are producing really efficiently. Christian Watson is rookie year, really, really efficient. Dubs has never been that guy. But then I watch a lot of Green Bay film and it's like Dubs is popping up all the time, making big plays, third down catches in the red zone. And do you guys remember
the makes a lot of plays.
Oh yeah. The playoff run, he had 234 receiving yards in two games. Like he's a legitimately good player to pair with all these other really, really talented and diverse skill sets. And so we can start wherever with this. I guess I wanted to bring up their PFF grades. Dontavian Wicks, Adam at the top of the show, highlighted him. Highest PFF grade of the receivers here, 77 was his receiving grade, 74.4 for Jaden Reed, 74 for Dubs, 70.3 for Christian Watson. But Watson was really starting to find a rhythm before he got hurt. The two games before his last injury against Kansas City, he had an 88 and a 90 grade, and he was really looked unstoppable, looked like the guy we saw during his rookie season. So yeah, I know Jaden Reed is the guy that we have most recently been excited about on Beyond the Box Score. And then Christian Watson is Dan's infamous like first call, like when we started the show. So whichever direction you want to take it in, Dan, with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be kind of the issue for me. I like all of them, including Wicks on film. The two I like the most would probably be Watson and Reed. I'll go Watson real quick. One thing that's maybe going to scare me, and I'll probably be investing a lot in Watson because I know the price is going to be so depressed after last year. It's going to be value city. But injuries have been really a big problem for him in both of his first 2 years and then also in his collegiate career at times. So just something to consider. But Reed, man, like Jaden Reed is such a fun prospect because when I first got into it last year, he was a rookie last year. I was like, I'm not going to like this guy. I don't like the analytics on this dude. And my friend was just like, dude, just watch the film and see what you see, because he's not going to like blow you out of the gym with a 40 time or a vertical jump or all those like testing relative athletic score. But just watch the tape. And when I watched it, I saw exactly what I saw on his Green Bay film from this year as a rookie, Jacob, that innate ability to tempo his routes. You know who I compare him to? Because he also is able to just get so much separation on the vertical plane because of how he tempos his routes. I compare him to Doug Baldwin. That's who he reminds me of. A great receiver who had so much fantasy success at times with the Seahawks, and they remind me so much of each other. And even to some degree, I think Jaden Reed is a little bit more of an explosive player. And it's crazy to say because Baldwin was pretty explosive, but I'm never given credit for that. So Reed is probably my favorite of the group, Jacob. But I got to say, like watching the tape, because you had me watch some games for Green Bay, and I rewatched the Giants game. He had a really good second half. That pass game, they had over 200 yards. The Dallas game, the Detroit game from Thanksgiving. There's just, like you said, the key thing here, and this is really important for the success of this entire pass game, is what you said. It's a combination of Jordan Love really understanding what Matt LaFleur is looking for and understanding the system really well, which allows him to throw with anticipation into open. So the biggest difference in the NFL for me is quarterbacks who can throw with anticipation and quarterbacks who need to wait for the receiver to get open to throw the football. When you can throw the football into space before those receivers are getting out of their breaks, it's just going to give you such an edge because there's not much of space in general to work with in an NFL passing game. The windows are so tight. The coverage is right there. And so that's what you saw. And you brought that up, Jacob. And if that's the case, like you're seeing 15 yard out to Romeo Doubs, right on time, right on the money. Doubs makes the catch. In breakers to Doubs, right on time. Jaden Reed in the slot, right on time. Dontavian Wicks. It really was all of those guys. So it is going to be a little tough for me to figure out the target share and figure out like where we're going to go with this. So I think what I'll probably end up doing is just investing in all of them in different spots.
My favorite strategy right now is to draft Christian Watson. And then depending on when Jaden Reed goes, to draft him too, but unfortunately he goes too early. Like he went before Christian Watson.
Right.
I figured Reed would probably get a lot of smoke this offseason and end up being the highest drafted of these guys.
You don't know how it's gonna play out, but is that what you're gonna do? You're gonna take Reed first?
So I think for best ball purposes, I want a lot of exposure to Green Bay, and you can spread it and get an even distribution of what you want. And I just think this offense is like a discount version of Houston, and the ambiguity like makes it even better to target Green Bay because, people don't know who to target necessarily other than like Jaden Reed. But honestly, Jaden Reed, in the games that Watson was healthy, saw his snap rate drop a little bit, and they really like Doubs and Watson, I think, as the two outside receivers. So if that's the case again, I'm going to be a little bit hesitant, maybe potentially even underweight on him relative to the other guys.
Right. Can I give you the numbers real quick?
Yeah.
Jaden Reed, weeks 1 through 3, no Christian Watson, 27.4% target per route run rate, on pace for 113 targets. Weeks 4 through 13 with Christian Watson, that 27.4 target per route run rate goes to 19.4%. Last five games, weeks 14 through 18, Jaden Reed actually missed one of those games. The target per route run rate goes back up to 34.9%. I mean, it was all about, coincidence or not, I don't know, but it was all about Christian Watson. And that's why I would take Watson first, because I still think what we saw him do to the Chiefs, and the game before that was the Lions, was right before that. Those two games on national TV. I don't think anyone else on the team can do that. He's special at times. Reed, watching his film, I guess I was surprised at how downfield he was. Right, he's, like I said about Khalil Shakir, Jaden Reed. This is a slot guy with a 10-yard A-dot who's making plays downfield, who's doing like outside-y kind of things, right? He's not pigeonholed into this typical slot, like Lockett and Baldwin, right? Like you said, right? So he's really impressive too. But I think Watson's on another level personally.
I think that I totally agree with the points you made there. I think that Reed and Watson really have similar types of roles in the way that they type to get, they like to get them the ball. Green Bay does. It's weird because they're different prototypes of receivers, obviously, especially like from a frame and size standpoint. But they like to get them the ball in space, and they like to get them catch and run opportunities. And I do think that when Watson's healthy, he's been the guy. Reed might have been so good this year that he pushes more into that workload, but. Yeah, and then the other thing I would echo from what you just said is like Jayden Reed as a player was unbelievably impressive. All the pace and everything that Dan mentioned that he plays with, it reminds me of Jaxon Smith and Jigba when you watch him where he's deceptive and he's able to do like create separation. But then he does have, I feel like, the juice that in Jigba seems to lack. And it's like, man, this guy could be an absolute stud. I don't know if it'll be next year. It'll depend on the role and if he's on the field in two receiver sets, I think.
Right, which he really wasn't, right? Because his snap share, even when Watson was out, wasn't super high, Jayden Reed. But I do want to point out that just because something happened last year, it doesn't mean it's going to happen again this year. That target per route run rate with Christian Watson on the field was or playing 19.4%, way below when Christian Watson was out. That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be the same case next season. And he might just be more reliable, and he might be he might have more upside because Watson just seems to have these chronic hamstring injuries that he even said they can't figure it out. He changed his offseason routine and it didn't work. So, you know, it
his
might
build looks like he's just somebody who's going to get injured a lot.
Yeah, it really sucks. And Dan, I think what you said about him understanding Jordan Love, understanding Matt LaFleur's offense, I'm not sure if you saw this, but that's exactly what Matt LaFleur said last. I'm not saying you stole it. I'm saying you're exactly right.
I didn't see that. Yeah.
That's exactly what Matt LaFleur said. During Jordan Love's hot streak at the end of the season. He said he's just much more comfortable in the offense, and you're seeing it on the field.
It makes all the difference when those quarterbacks throw with anticipation. It's everything.
I can't draft Luke Musgrave. It's not that
I love
him,
Luke Musgrave, and I love his tape, but I also like Kraft, and I like both of them coming out of the draft. They just did a phenomenal job. I mean, look at these guys. Like, they didn't have to use any capital except for Christian Watson. They traded up for him in the beginning of round two. They didn't really use any crazy capital on any of these guys. Reed, Wicks, Dobbs, Musgrave, Kraft. These are all day two or day three picks, and they all look pretty damn good on tape. It's wild how well Green Bay does a job of scouting skill talent. This has been my opinion forever with this team.
Yeah. Reed was the 50th pick in the draft.
Oh, yeah. They used the day two pick.
Yeah,
for sure.
But that's another thing, and maybe people don't realize that. He's a pretty high draft pick. You know, that's pedigree, I'd say.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. A lot of people thought, oh, it's 11. Go. Oh, Jacob said he needed to leave by 11. Here we are. We have hit 11. Thank you very much. Everybody, you know, get a nice pastrami sandwich on any get it on. Let's see, what would I get it on? I would get it on white bread. I wouldn't.
Oh,
I don't think I'd get it on
what
wheat.
What the hell?
Something
like Wonder Bread, dude.
I'd get it on.
Are you out of your mind?
I'd get it on a cinnamon
raisin. You put pastrami on a disgusting piece of soggy, thick
white bread, American
white
cheese.
Bread.
It doesn't need to be Wonder Bread, by the way. There's plenty of different types. How about a cinnamon raisin bagel, Dan, with pastrami and Russian dressing?
Actually, don't hate that. I like mixing salty with sweet. I like mixing salty with sweet, so I'm in on that.
Thank you to Jacob and Dan and Thomas and to all of you for watching and listening. This is Beyond the Box Score. We're back tomorrow talking about how to build the perfect roster on Fantasy Football Today. See you later.
On May 23rd,
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.